Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome to the Premier League preview show for game week 28 of the 17-18 season. I'm Tom Rennie, and coming up on the show, having been knocked out of the FA Cup by lowly Wigan Athletic, can Manchester City recover to win the first of what could still be an impressive treble of trophies when they face cup specialist Arsenal at Wembley in the Carabao? Plus, Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte resume rivalries after tough Champions League draws in midweek. And we make it 11 teams are still in relegation trouble, though any more losses for West Bromwich Albion, and it may be down to 10 by the end of this weekend. That's all coming up on the Premier League Preview Show. Full programme in the Premier League this weekend. We start at 12:30 UK time with Leicester against Stoke City. Across Saturday, we've got Liverpool taking on West Ham United, Newcastle at Bournemouth, Brighton take on Swansea, Burnley against Southampton, and what a game, West Brom against Huddersfield. The late game sees Watford take on Everton. The Hornets not safe yet either. On Sunday, Crystal Palace Tottenham was on Monday, is now back to Sunday at 12 o'clock UK time, followed by the big Premier League game of the weekend. That's Manchester United against Chelsea. And then the late game on Sunday, live from Wembley Stadium, right around the world, is the Carabao Cup final as Manchester City take on that great cup team, bad league team. That's Arsenal. Alongside me is a man who watched Lionel Messi in the flesh this week, and I'm pretty sure the tattoo is close to being completed. It is TalkSport's football editor, David Walker. How are you, mate?
I'm good. What, a tattoo of Messi?
Yeah, I think it'd really suit you. That'd be a great thing to get out of parties, wouldn't it?
I'm not a tattoo man.
Did you love him?
For Messi or anyone
you
else.
You seem like you'd look
good
in a tattoo.
If I was
going to
get
though.
A tattoo of a footballer, it wouldn't be Messi.
Who would it be?
Could you guess?
Troy Deeney?
Not Troy Deeney.
Graham Taylor?
Not Graham Taylor. You won't get it.
I'm going to keep doing it.
It's
Stefano Akaka?
No.
Richarlison?
Doesn't currently play for the current team.
Adrian Merritt? Oh, no, he's still there, isn't he? Lloyd Doyley?
Yes!
Yes! Yes! I knew him. I kept going. That's the Hall of Greats yeah. in that order. Watford legend. You should get that done. And I'll get... Well, I already look like Julian Dick, so maybe I'm already doing a tribute. I don't know. Listen, you were at the Chelsea game this week at Stamford Bridge against Barcelona. Brilliant performance, I thought, from Chelsea. You take on Man United on
Sunday.
Right.
Let me stop you there, because that's really interesting, because I've had all week since that game in listening to people on TalkSport and all over the place.
Never listened to TalkSport, mate.
Very divisive over whether they thought that was a great performance by Chelsea or not, whether they thought that they should have started one of the two strikers, Morata or Giroud, or they should have gone for it more. But I agree with you. They're in the tie. That had to be the goal, right? Mm. To still be in the tie when going to the Nou Camp. They were one bad error away from winning that game 1-0. You know, Barcelona had their chances. Chelsea had probably as many, if not more, on the night. And I think you've got to be pretty happy with that.
I always think about when Jean-Luc Picard said to Commander Data in Star Trek The Next Generation, sometimes you can get everything right and still lose. That's not a mistake. That's life. And I think Chelsea and Antonio Conte got everything right. He picked the right team. It was a bold move to not play Giroud or Morata and not play one and then replace him with the other, to do the Hazard false number nine thing. And everything was right. There's no way he could have legislated for the Christensen pass, the Azpilicueta missed tackle, and, you know...
He should have tried to take Iniesta out, shouldn't he?
That's the weirdest thing about it. It's not the Christensen ball, which is poor. It's the fact that Azpilicueta is their best defender, just kind of put in a very soft sliding tackle.
Because it was there. He got to the, you know, he was at
the ball at
the right time.
I can't understand why he didn't get it.
Yeah, I agree. It was strange. I thought he was going to get it and just to clean, you know, the ball and the man out. But, you know, Iniesta, fleet of foot. There he is. He's a great player.
And tell me about Lionel. Come on. I mean, there's people around the world that love Lionel Messi, and rightly so. They've never seen him in the flesh. You have. Tell me about it.
Well, it was amazing. It was the first time I've seen him in the flesh. And obviously, the thing that strikes you about him at first glance is just how small he is. His shorts go down to almost below the knee.
Did you think of him as like a younger brother?
He looks so small. Half the Barcelona team do, really. But the thing that struck me, and I was just focusing on him for long periods of the game, not watching the ball, just looking squarely at him. And he just, for large portions of the match, he just walks around. He's just sort of there. He's just, you know, muddling around, not really bothered. But then, bang, in the key moments, he comes alive, makes a darting little run or comes deep to get the ball, shifts his body. I mean, he's just, you know, the balance that he has. Everyone knows how great a player he is. But to see it in the flesh was quite amazing. But I was sort of looking at the Chelsea defenders. When the ball was at the other end of the pitch, you sort of think that the defenders would always be wanting to keep an eye on him. Where's he going? Where is he? And they, you know, it was like he wasn't there. It was like he had like this invisibility cloak on. That nobody could see where he was until the moment where, bang, he came alive. And it was quite amazing. You know, and the goal, he's finally scored against Chelsea. He needed that one clear chance and he took it.
I wonder how bothered he was about that. Easy. I wonder when he was going into it, he was thinking, oh, I'd love to score against Chelsea.
Probably.
Do you think he's affected by those things?
I think he's done so much in his career that, you know, he would be looking at that as a something that he would need to put right. There, he's played against them in such big games, and he would know that if I had scored in some of those other games, like in that semi-final, maybe we would have won another Champions League. So, you know, it's important to him, I imagine.
I wonder if he lies awake at night thinking to himself, I've never scored at that London Stadium. Should probably play for those Hammers one day, just to make sure I've scored at the nation's premier athletics track. Another story that's been dominating the headlines this week, Paul Pogba. How much of a big story it is depends on many variables. Didn't play from the start in midweek in the Champions League game in Seville, where Mourinho and Man United do what they do under Mourinho and tried to not lose the game and did that very effectively. Had to bring him on. But what was interesting, I thought, and as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Paul Pogba. I think he's a very talented player, but isn't going to fulfil his potential because of his weird dab-heavy attitude. It drives me mad. What was weird is when he was coming on, it was almost like Mourinho was trying to brief him fully on Herrera's job, and he was like, stand here in a wall, do this, do that. For your player that's of this calibre, it's odd that he would need to be taught the basics and told the basics when he comes on, isn't it? Does that show they haven't spoken all week? Am I reading too much into it now?
Well, I don't know, but it's an interesting point because I noticed the same at Chelsea. On Tuesday, Conte, and you know, he's famous for this, when he's in the mood, he hasn't always been lately, but when he's in the mood, he will literally try and micromanage every element of the match to the point where if a fullback is running in front of him and has two options to pass, he'll be screaming at him to do the one that he wants him to do. He doesn't seem to want his players to really think for themselves. And yet there are some managers who completely other way and will just maybe do their preparation in the week and then just say, right, okay, it's down to you guys now. I've taught you what what we want to do. You're the ones that have got to go and do it. You'd think that someone of Paul Pogba's quality would know these things, but perhaps it's just the managers not wanting to leave anything to chance. Their neck is on the line at the end of the day. Paul Pogba has a series of bad games and United slip down the league. Paul Pogba doesn't get sacked, does he? Mourinho does.
Is the rift real and does Pogba play against Chelsea this weekend?
Well, that's going to be fascinating to see that team lineup when it comes out just after 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Because Herrera's not going to play. So the opening is there, but there are other options.
I mean, it seems mad, doesn't it, that we've reached a point where Mourinho seemingly prefers to play McTominay ahead of
who's been very good.
Pogba. Yeah, great. And he's taken his chances and great. We want to see young players come through the academies and get first team minutes and good luck to him. But it's amazing to think that it's come to that. Because, you know, Pogba, he had a great start to the season. And now, you know, he said he was ill at the weekend. He said he was ill at the weekend. Did you see the interview with Mourinho before the game on BT? You know, you're trying to read between the lines and it doesn't seem like to me, it looks like there's been a falling out.
It's odd that, I think with Paul Pogba, the issue is that when a player is ill or off form, which happens to anyone, Lionel Messi's had periods of poor form during his career, But what a lot of players have got is that credit in the bank from previous performances. And what Pogba doesn't have is that period where United fans and Mourinho and us, as people who watch a lot of football, go, but he was so great September, October, November. I know he played well start of the season, but was he spectacular? And I would say the answer is probably no. And the assist stat, 9 assists, you know, a lot of them, as we've discussed loads of times, don't really count.
I think some of the performances, he was meeting expectations.
But this is, well, okay, that's a good way of putting it. But he's not exceeding those expectations, and that is what we expected from him.
Well, I saw an interview with Rio Ferdinand the other day, and I thought he made a really good point. He said when he flourished at Juventus, he had lots of really world-class experienced players with him. He would have Chiellini behind him, Buffon's in the team. He's got Pirlo there. And they would be able to help him drive up the standards of the team, perhaps give him advice positionally and stuff, and just allow him to do what he does when he gets on the ball. At Manchester United, there aren't that many leaders around him in that team, are there? Look at those centre-backs behind him, who are not going to necessarily be communicating. Smalling and Jones, at the moment, are having enough trouble communicating with each other, let alone anywhere else on the pitch, it seems. You know, there aren't a load of leaders that of the type that you've seen in Manchester United teams.
But he's meant
to
be the leader, isn't he?
Perhaps
making
he is.
The other players better. He was the captain 6 weeks ago, and now he's behind Herrera, who was an outcast in August and September, and Scott McTominay. It's a fascinating topic, and we will talk about this more as we count down to a massive weekend with our guest a bit later in the show. Wanted to mention this briefly as well. Man City were unhappy. They didn't know there was going to be a camera in the tunnel during their FA Cup loss to Wigan Athletic.
They have one in their own tunnel, don't they?
They have one in their own tunnel. And also,
and you can pay.
They have a glass tunnel.
You can pay to watch.
What were they? So it's so bizarre that all of a sudden they need to be told that you need to not act like a three-year-old in the tunnel.
I know.
Like Guardiola lost it. Guardiola totally lost his cool with Paul Cook, irrespective of what you think about Paul Cook, who's the Wigan manager, and his kind of attitude on the sideline. He waited for him like you do after recess for someone who's really annoyed you. You're going to give a quick dead leg to before going back into class. That's what he does. That's why they're annoyed about it, because Guardiola again showed that when it doesn't go his way, he acts like a child. That was extremely childish. And I've got to mention this as well. A lot of people out there will watch this in other countries. And the footage in the UK was being shown by the BBC. And the BBC in the UK, as soon as they saw that erupt in the tunnel, they cut it off.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a big problem bringing tunnel cam and dressing room cam in, that the stuff we really wanted to see, everyone was too afraid to show. Well, that's one of the best half times I've ever seen.
It's a huge contrast to the world of American sports, where cameras are in the dressing rooms, people are doing interviews.
They've barely got
their
towels on.
Exactly.
Before they say they want to go to Disneyland.
Look, Guardiola has his many, many fans and critics. I don't think, given this season, how Manchester City have played, notwithstanding the results recently where they've lost those few matches, no one can really deny how great he is as a coach. Clearly, he's obsessed with winning. He's obsessed at being the best he can be. And it does very much seem to be that he cannot control that obsession. That if something happens and he perceives that to be an injustice against his team, he just can't control it. And we've seen it before, and I'm sure we'll see it again. Mm. And it is a slight on it. It is something that lets him down. He lets himself down, I think, in those moments. He gives ammunition to his critics when he behaves like that, because he doesn't need to do that. Or maybe he does. Maybe that's part of his personality, and if he doesn't have that, if he doesn't act like that, he can't do the rest of it.
I feel the same about biscuits. And I'm a little bit annoyed that, having asked you last week to bring in digestives, you brought nothing for me. And I am going to be seriously Paul cooking you for the next few minutes.
Okay.
In fury. Is that all right?
I'll see you outside.
Well, you keep your biscuits outside. I'll see you in the kitchen. Anyway, Premier League preview show. We're going to talk about United-Chelsea next. You are listening to the Premier League preview show for the 28th week of the season. 11 games to go for so many in the Premier League, and plenty to still be decided. We'll talk about the relegation places later in the show, of which there are 11 teams, we reckon, who could still go down, though you could easily put Everton and maybe even Leicester in there, considering how many points everyone down the bottom is getting. For the moment, let's look at the top of the table. City, of course, going to win it, but second, third, fourth, fifth, not going to say sixth, because of course that's where Arsenal are going to finish. But those positions are all still up for grabs. And two of those teams meet this weekend at Old Trafford at 2:05 UK time. It is Manchester United against Chelsea. We are joined by a former Chelsea winger to preview this game. Live from the golf course, it's Clive Walker. How are you, mate? You all right?
I'm very well, Tom. Good afternoon.
Thank you for finding some time for us. Listen, Chelsea in midweek, Dave and I were talking about this earlier in the show, I thought were very, very good against Barcelona, but maybe the season is revolving around Antonio Conte having a good performance in the Champions League, because he ain't going to be there next year, so why would he care about qualifying for next year's Champions League? How do they recover from not winning a game they should have won?
Well, I think first and foremost, we've got to look at Barcelona arguably being one of the best teams around in the world, and I think you're always going to be up against it possession-wise with Barcelona. I think what Antonio Conte did with his team selection and formation was to suggest that Chelsea were going to hit on the counter-attack, and although being at home, we're understandably going to be short on the possession count, and I think that showed by quite a margin. However, what they needed to find was a solution to getting at their back four, which they managed to do and score the goal, obviously. The mistake that caused the equaliser was certainly annoying from Antonio Conte's point of view, because he'd set it all up that wasn't going to happen. But we know these things do, and occasionally they do hurt you. And I guess that sort of almost put a dampener on the whole evening, because if they'd have walked away from winning 1-0, and for me, putting in a good performance against one of the best teams around, I think that would have been absolutely superb.
From the way they played in midweek, I don't think that Eden Hazard or Morata, who came on, or Giroud is the most vital player that they've got right now. And also, on the pitch in midweek with Iniesta and Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez out there, they weren't the best players on the field. Willian had a great game. A couple of times he hit the woodwork, scored as well. Where is he now in the Chelsea pecking order? Because when we were going into January, we were talking about Conte not wanting him and him maybe having to move on.
Well, is that the media saying Conte doesn't want him? I didn't really think we
heard him say
that. The
fact he sat on the bench for months is the main reason.
He has sat on the bench, and he's been good impact-wise. I'll tell you what he has done, though, Tom, in recent weeks, is he's come into form. And he was, for me, going into the game, the form player, which is probably why Antonio Conte went with the team selection he did. He could quite easily have picked Morata or Giroud and played Pedro and Hazard either side. But he decided to go this way because leaving out William would have been a massive thing, because he'd been in such good form and scored goals. So you can understand on the night William playing well, because he was in form, he was full of confidence, and that's what you get from players. And I think that was an important factor in his team selection. So arguably, is William playing his way back into the team when the team are producing some results? They had a very poor January, so maybe they turn that corner and can finish the season strongly. And that will mean players like Willian, Hazard, you know, these big players turning up for the rest of the season and having, you know, the best time of their lives, arguably. And then maybe Willian might be a player that Antonio Conte might want to keep, of course, depending on the situation come the beginning of next season.
Clive, how do you think we'll see Antonio Conte set Chelsea up on Sunday? Because it's a completely different prospect and challenge to the one they faced in the week against Barcelona, where they knew they weren't going to have as much of the ball and it was all about keeping it tight and taking those one or two opportunities. It's not, even though they're away from home against Manchester United, it's not going to be the same prospect, is it?
Well, it isn't, no. It is a different formula for sure. And they will look to spring a surprise. You know, I think this is what these top coaches do, you know, the Pep Guardiola, the Joses of this world. They look for a solution to beat the team that they're playing against. I think when they're playing against the teams lower down the league, they can take more of a risk. But I think with something like this, it's one of those games that very, very important for both sides. I think I would think that Antonio Conte will play similar to Barcelona in the respect that he will look for the counter-attacking system. And I think who he selects in the centre of midfield for me is a big, big ask, because obviously Cesc Fabregas played the other day and barely got a touch. N'Golo Kante got missed out a lot of the time, but was still influential in certain areas. But it's obviously Kante would play alongside somebody else so that they're able to feed the ball to the likes of Hazard and Willian and whoever plays up front with them.
For Manchester United, they played in midweek in the Champions League against Sevilla. I suppose the biggest surprise for us is that anyone was surprised with the way Manchester United played. I mean, you would have seen him destroy the careers of the entertainers like Joe Cole and make him fullbacks before. The fact that he's gone to Seville and been super negative, does that have any impact on the way United set up this weekend? Can he afford to just allow Chelsea to have the ball at Old Trafford?
Well, I think as I said previously, I think they go with this idea that they can change things around. I've seen Jose, and I know him from the past, and I think I've seen Jose, when needs must, can put in performances like he did against Sevilla and shut the door, shut up shop. But I think with Chelsea, he's going to expect them to sit deep and hit on the counter-attack. So I think he's got to play on the front foot. I don't think he can afford, especially at home, to sit back. He's got to push forward and try and get that first goal, which will make a huge difference to the result. So from his point of view, after the Sevilla game, he's got to play differently. How he goes about that is another way. But, you know, is our players, you know, like Marcus Rashford, going to be involved from the start? You know, I think he's been a bit of a thorn in the past towards Chelsea. So, you know, that might be a change of player, if you like, if not formation.
Dave, any stats for this weekend that can give us any indication about how this game's going to go?
Well, looking at Romelu Lukaku, we know that he's failed to score in any of his six Premier League matches against the Big Six this season. He's only had four shots in targets in those games. And I think there will be focus on Lukaku. It was believed that Conte wanted to take him to Chelsea in the summer. Of course, we know he played for Chelsea years previous. He's now back under Mourinho at Manchester United. But I think there's going to be a lot of focus on the strikers. Lukaku for Manchester United. And who starts up front for Chelsea? Is it Hazard again? Is it Giroud? Is it Morata now he's back fit? I think that'll be intriguing to see what happens.
Clive, what do you think? Who starts up front for Chelsea?
It's a tough one because, to be fair, he's got a choice of Morata or Giroud, and arguably it's a difficult one whether either is 100% fit in respect of playing for 90 minutes. I don't think he'll go with the three. I think it might be a slot where Pedro drops out and he plays one or the other. I think he needs a target man and he needs a strong one, and I think at this moment in time, I think Giroud is probably favourite, but either player can play that role. I think we're also seeing Morata came in guns all blazing, and Morata sort of disappeared as the 2017 come to a finish, and Morata was out injured. And I think he, having seen little bits of him just for a few minutes, you see a more encouraging Morata, but I think he's got a way to go to get up to the speed of the others.
I've got to be honest here. I know it's a big game and we're looking forward to it and all that. This screams 0-0 to me. This screams two teams who don't want the ball and two teams that may well be happy with a draw.
I think Manchester United is certainly more important for Manchester United not to lose. So it's, you know, for Chelsea, if a draw for Chelsea doesn't do that, it keeps them in the top four. But if they can win this game, they go level on points with Manchester United. The goal difference is pretty similar as well. And this would be a real big, you know, statement of intent to lodge themselves firmly as contenders for that second spot.
Well, I think you're seeing a Chelsea side that has realised that these big games were just around the corner a couple of weeks ago. You know, obviously twice against Barcelona, Man United and Man City. So they'd have been looking forward to these games and they've gone into it with a bit of momentum. OK, they didn't quite get the result against Barcelona, but they've been OK of late. You know, they've got their spark back. I got a feeling that Chelsea, well, might look to win the game. I don't think they'll sit for the draw. I think they'll be more positive in getting bodies forward when they get the chance for the counter-attack.
Fantastic game. Shame as a cup final on the same day, really. That's at 2:05 UK time on Sunday. Clive, you're part of TalkSport's international commentary team on Saturday. We broadcast every single Premier League game outside the UK through our broadcast partners right around the world to 70 countries. Leicester against Stoke is the 12:30 UK time kickoff, and I think this could be a real chance for Stoke City, who have obviously bumbled and stumbled their way through the season, and Paul Lambert hasn't really had much of an impact at the club, and of course he hasn't. I mean, he's basically Mark Hughes with a different accent. But for Leicester, the reason this isn't opening for Stoke for me is that I think they're going to focus on the FA Cup from now. If you're looking at teams still in the FA Cup who could get a bit of glory and who in the league have got nothing to play for, you're looking at Leicester City as they've got a favourable draw in the quarterfinals as well. There could be little openings here, and we do see teams who look at cup competitions as their preferred competition start falling away a bit in the league, don't we?
I think we can do. I'm on this occasion, I'm going to disagree with you though, Tom, which is not the first time, I'm sure. but I don't think Stoke can beat Leicester. I think at the moment Leicester are OK as a Premier League side. They've got their rhythm back a little bit better than it was, and I think they're looking upwards. And I think always as well, good cup runs can give you good league results. And I think they've got to hang on in there in the league. Yeah, and the cup, the FA Cup is going to make a difference to them, and it could inspire them to have better league results. So, for me, Leicester being the home side, I think are firm favourites.
Just one quick question on Jamie Vardy. I know you were doing the game when he scored that 11th goal in 11 games a couple of years ago. And you're back watching Jamie Vardy again this weekend. Is he playing anywhere near as good as he was back then? It's 4-4 for him at the moment.
Well, I think he is, but he's just not getting as many opportunities as he did. I think that year when he was just banging in goals for fun, you know, that was opportunity after opportunity. I don't think he's getting as many, but I think he's up to as good as his best at the moment. And don't forget, you know, he's 30 years of age now?
Yeah, 31,
you know,
yeah.
31, yeah. You know, he's looking over his shoulder at the moment. He's signed a decent contract.
He's more under the radar now, though, isn't he? You know, we were looking at him because he was the story of that season. Leicester were the story of that season. Now he's just going about his business. He's scoring goals. It's good for Leicester. It's good for England.
Mm. Yeah, he is. I mean, you're right. Absolutely spot on. And I think that's why he quite won't be up to that par or that level that he was. We won't look at it in that shocked or surprised manner. And I think the fact that he's still putting the goals away with the chances he gets. I think that's a good thing. That's a typical striker who's not only informed but full of confidence. And I think that's where he is.
I don't know, Clive. When I say something, you can't disagree more.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Dave says something, you're absolutely right. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I'm not taking it personally, mate. You know, but it's clear. The audience are hearing it, okay?
Yeah, well, that's okay, Tom. Wait till we do commentary together, and then that'll be over.
Clive Walker, former Chelsea Sunderland man, thanks for your time. We'll speak to you again soon on the Premier League preview show. We're going to talk Carabao Cup final next. You are listening to the Premier League preview show for the 28th week of the season, but it's not just about the Premier League this weekend. We've got our first cup final of the season. It's the Carabao Cup final, also known as the EFL Cup final, the League Cup final, and that competition what you play your second team in. It's Man City against Arsenal at Wembley, 4:30 UK time kickoff. We're broadcasting live in the UK and outside the UK. And if you're listening internationally, your commentary team are Phil Blacker and the former Man City captain, Steve Lomas, who joins us on the line right now. How are you, Steve? You all right, mate?
Hey, guys. Hey, Tom.
Thanks for coming on the preview show once again. Let's talk about Manchester City, because losing against Wigan Athletic with, apart from Kevin De Bruyne and the goalkeeper, pretty much their strongest team. That's one hell of a blow going into a cup final, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, they've had a little bit of slump in terms of where they've been this season, in terms of games drawn, and obviously losing at Wigan, who I've got to say thoroughly deserves the result. So maybe it's been a little kick up the backside that is needed, that, you know, they've got to not be complacent. I think, you know, as regards to the final, I think it'll be like you say, a kick up the backside for them to go and lift the first trophy in Pep's reign.
But also, it might be a real kick up the backside and some real optimism for Arsenal, because they've now seen that Manchester City have been beaten by Liverpool and Wigan when we previously thought they were invincible. And they've been beaten by two completely different opponents. One went toe-to-toe with them, one defended and got one chance and took it. Now, I think Arsenal will be more suited to the former of those two approaches, but it shows that Man City can be beaten in a one-off game.
Yeah, they can be, and obviously over the past, Arsenal have been, the masters are doing that there on the one-off occasions, but I just can't see it, Tom. I think Arsenal's defensive frailties, their injuries, there's obviously Ramsey looks like he's going to miss, Lacazette's out, I think Welbeck's only fit strike at the minute, along with the new signing, Aubameyang. So, you know, I just look at Arsenal and the North London derby and how they just didn't lay a glove on Tottenham. And you think, such a big game of that magnitude, there needed to be a little bit more intensity in their play. But on a one-off, if the big players really come to the force, the likes of Ozil, they have a chance. But if City are anywhere near the best, and I think that result at Wigan probably couldn't have helped Arsenal, because I think it'll be that little bit of a push to say, come on, lads, you know, let's get back to where we were, and Pep will be itching to get that first trophy.
I wonder who plays at the back this weekend for Manchester City, because he's tried a few different combinations since they signed Laporte in the transfer window. They tried him with Stones, they tried him with Kompany, they put Otamendi and Kompany together. Stones has been in and out. They've tried Zinchenko at left-back, Delph at left-back, Danilo, who is the player I dislike the most in English football, because he won't even use his left foot as a swinger. He won't even use it as a Stevie Lomas swinger. It's so annoying that he won't use it. So what is the back for this weekend for Man City?
You just don't know. I think, like you said, Tom, he's tried a lot of different combinations, I think. But the good thing is he has can call upon the likes of Vincent Kompany now. Danilo, his left foot's poor, but his right foot ain't bad. but I think whatever he's called upon, you know, it's decent. Stones is coming back after the injury blow, after he had started the season really well. So I think it's just right the way throughout the squad. They've got so many options. I just think, like I said, them last couple of results, maybe just as a little wake-up call for Man City to say, right, come on, lads, everything's been going well, but we've had a little bit of a wake-up call. Let's go and take Arsenal apart, get back to where we were. And obviously it looks like the league's at a foregone conclusion, but obviously they've got the Champions League, which is a massive opportunity for them as well.
I know Arsenal are obviously still in the Europa League. They're fighting to get into the top four, although it looks increasingly unlikely. This really could be their only chance of having any sort of glory this season.
Well, I think if you asked Arsene Wenger, he would definitely probably, like you said, Europe looks the only real option to get in the top four. He's come out and stated that he still feels that they can get in there, but it would have to be almost perfect running in the Premier League, which at the moment I don't see them doing that there. They're just, in terms of the defensive frailties, you know, whether he plays four, whether he plays three, the conceding goals, you know, the big question mark for me is the lack of a ball winning midfielder, where it gives the back three or back four a bit of protection. They haven't got that, and it's showing. So I think there's bigger issues there. I think, you know, Europa League is definitely the way into, a la Man United, getting into the top. Up your Champions League, so it's a big day in terms of giving the fans a day out, because, you know, I think the majority of the Arsenal fans are, you know, disillusioned with the situation, and you know, it would maybe give Arsene Wenger, you know, a bit of respite.
I just wonder how much they regret selling Olivier Giroud at this point. I thought it was a mistake from the moment it happened. When teams have threatened against City this season, Bristol City, Burnley, and to an extent Wigan as well, there is higher balls through the centre, over the top. Someone like Olivier Giroud could have really thrived. There's no Lacazette. Big test for Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's so fresh to English football. But of course, it's not the only time they meet each other this week. They play each other again in the Premier League on Thursday, which may even be more important for Arsenal when, as Dave says, there is still a Champions League race to be fought. And there's a chance that Spurs, there's a chance that United, certainly one or United or Chelsea, is going to drop points this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. But I just think, you know, it's no mistake in terms of how Arsenal, you seem to, every year you think, yeah, this is going to be the chance, and then they don't do it. And they just haven't got the blend right between attack and defence, and you know, in terms of players that want to actually go about winning the ball back, And against the top teams, especially when you're away from home, you need that. You need them players with resilience. Arsenal and the great Arsenal teams in the past have had them. Vieira, Petit, Ray Parlour, Martin Keown, you know, Nigel Winterburn. Good players, but wanted to do the other side of the game. And unfortunately, Arsenal don't do that side as well as the other top teams in terms of getting the ball back. Liverpool do it really well with a high press. Man City as well in terms of Pep. Chelsea, obviously, are very structured and organised in terms of with Conte, the Italian way. He respects that the other side of the game has to be done well. And Arsenal, unfortunately, just have got the balance wrong in the last, for me, the last 3 or 4 years.
Do you know what? I fancy Arsenal. I can only fancy Arsenal in a cup game. Arsenal at Wembley just seems to be a bit of an immovable force. Everything says City win this.
Unless everything, playing Spurs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good point. Everything logically to me says City are going to win it, but I just see Arsenal do it. Steve, really quick prediction. Who's going to do it? You still think City?
I still think City. I think City 3-1.
Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I think City. Maybe in extra time.
Extra time. I fancy Arsenal, maybe extra time as well. But, you know, we all like more football, don't we? Steve Lomas, who's part of our international commentary team for this weekend. Thanks a lot, mate. We'll see you at the weekend. All right.
Top man, Tom.
Steve Lomas, former Manchester City West Ham captain as well. We're going to have him with us the weekend.
You know what I'm wondering about this Sunday?
What?
Penny for the thoughts of Alexis Sanchez.
Mm.
After he's had 90 minutes of playing in that, what can't be very fun, really.
No. Track back.
Side.
Track back.
From Mourinho's side for Manchester United at Old Trafford.
Tripping people over at Huddersfield
last week.
He's
going to watch his old mates from Arsenal at Wembley. He's going to watch his, what could have been new mates at Man City. One of them's going to be lifting the trophy, taking selfies in the dressing room, and he's just going to be there with his dogs, sad at home.
Counting his cash.
Yeah.
Counting his cash and stroking his dogs. I can't imagine there'll be too many that'll be feeling much sympathy for Alexis Sanchez, but I'd feel sorry for Olivier Giroud. Because for a long time, he has been trying to get in a first team in the Premier League leading the line. He went to Chelsea to do that. Massive game against Barcelona. That's pretty much what we think he's been brought in for. He's on the bench. And they've got a cup final coming up, Arsenal.
It's always going to be that way.
But maybe not immediately with Morata injured. We thought at least he'd start for a few weeks and maybe have a bit of a claim on the starting lineup. Mm. And now, Arsenal got no Lacazette. Forget Sanchez. It's old handsome Giroud I feel sorry for. We're going to preview loads of Premier League games when we come back. You are listening to the Premier League Preview Show. You are listening to the Premier League Preview Show. 28 weeks of the season will be done come the end of Sunday. Just 10 to go and lots to still be decided.
Is it come the end of Thursday? Is Thursday next weekend or is this weekend?
Thursday has technically already happened.
Next Thursday, when Arsenal play Man City.
Yeah, that's technically already happened. That was a previous game week that was moved forward. Okay. So technically, that was like game week 26 or something.
Right.
Work on your game weeks, man.
Okay.
Focus on your GWs. That's very much a key element of the preview show. Let's talk about some of those games. Our international feature game at 3 o'clock UK time is Liverpool up against West Ham United. Earlier in the season, it was the game that embarrassed Slaven Bilic to the point he got the old heave-ho. I think West Ham might have a decent chance of not getting thrashed, at least. Mm. But I think a decent chance of maybe forcing a draw from it.
Well, this has got all the hallmarks of a disappointing Liverpool performance.
I'm thinking Bournemouth. I'm thinking about all the teams
it's
that have
Saturday,
gone there.
Saturday, 3 o'clock. They're not in a big TV slot. They'd be expected to beat a lesser opponent at home. They beat Porto 5-0 in the Champions League last week. Everything's going well for them. They've had a week off because they're not in the FA Cup. And it just screams like 1-1 or a 1-0 West Ham win.
And West Ham hadn't won there since 1963 until they won 2 seasons ago by 3-0. Since then, they've gone 3 unbeaten at Anfield, including a couple of draws in there as well. West Ham have had 2 weeks off since the victory over Watford. Have I mentioned the victory over Watford, Dave? Did you remember that? Great game. Great performance. Good to put your lesser rivals to bed, I think. Tremendous victory there. Lanzini could be back, could potentially be a Liverpool player next season.
Well, Arnautovic will play, won't he? And he was back against Watford and made all the difference.
And Hernandez scoring regularly as well. I think there's a lot at the moment that West Ham can be positive about. I think they're in a situation where they'll get the 10 points they need to survive. Maybe one of them this weekend, but of course, if Liverpool score 1, they score 2, they score 3, they score 4, and And Mohamed Salah, I mean, the chant has gone round the nation and everyone's enjoying it. I've even got involved in it. You know I love a good chant. If he scores, I mean, he's averaging a goal or assist, I was reading earlier this week, every 64 minutes in home Premier League games.
It's sensational, isn't
it? That's crazy.
I think we all knew that he improved as a player since he'd left Chelsea and been at Roma. But nobody expected him to perform to the levels that he has done. And he's performing so well that I think Liverpool are going to have a job keeping hold of him in the summer.
Oh, unquestionably. Even if they qualify in the Champions League, he has been so elite as a player that there'll be the three or four big teams in the world saying, well, why is he playing there? And, I mean, Liverpool have got to finish in the Champions League places minimum in order to be able to retain Mohamed Salah and probably reinvest in players that he could play next to as well. But, you know, could go either way this weekend. I'm never going to predict a Liverpool performance, and West Ham could just as easily win it 3 as lose it by 7.
What do you think of Arnautovic's new hairdo?
Yeah, do you know what? Not enough people do the purple rinse anymore. I used to go to my nan's, she used to
purple
be a warden
rinse?
Of an old people's home.
More of a peroxide job, isn't
it? No, mate, that's proper. Like, when I used to go and have tea and coffee with the old ladies at my nan's old people's home years ago, that was the colour they all had. Queenie had it, Ivy had it, Maggie had it, all of them. Same haircut. Don't know what he's doing. Like, if I once dyed my hair blonde back in the days I had hair, but I didn't do the bleach job. I did one of those kind of off-the-shelf ones.
Yeah.
And it came out a weird sort of purple.
Have you been bald ever since then?
Yeah,
did
that's
it all
actually,
fall out?
Now I think about it, that was a terrible decision. I dyed my hair at 14. And yeah. Anyway, should look into that. I could sue someone. Let's move on. Watford. Wow, it's been a weird old time to be a Watford supporter. They've got Everton this weekend.
Yeah.
Everton dreadful away from home.
But
it's kind of result, kind of game that Watford can't afford not to win.
Yeah, you just really don't know what you're going to get from Watford on a week-to-week basis at the moment. We could just as easily roll Everton over here and embarrass them and inflict another terrible away defeat on them. Or we could, you know, we could get done by Allardyce and we could be edged out in a tight encounter. It's going to be really interesting. Watford has slowly started to get some of the players back who've been out injured for a long time. Kiko Firmino's been missing for a while. He played very well in the early part of the season. I'm not sure whether he'll be quite fit enough to start, but he's getting there. He should be involved in the squad at the weekend. And him and De La Feo played together in the Barcelona B setup when they were youngsters, and I know they're looking forward to linking up on the right hand side.
It's been good, De La Feu. I thought he was half decent against West Ham. Well, certainly was good against Chelsea.
And he plays against his old club here, who I know a number of Everton fans who would love to have had him back, and were very disappointed to see him go. And he's been very good so far for Watford. But it's a big game for Watford because they all are from now to the end of the season. They need to pick up the points. So do all the other teams in the bottom half of the table to try and guarantee safety. But Everton, you mentioned there are 11 teams in the relegation battle earlier on, and Everton being the uppermost of those 11. 34 points, 8 points clear of 18th place Southampton.
Where Sheffield United sat the year they went down, 8 points clear mid-table with 8 games to go.
I do feel that they're going to do enough at home to stay up, and they won't be involved in the thick of the relegation battle. But, you know, if they keep losing away, every time they go away from home, they lose. It's not good, and they'll continue to be in there. But
struggling at home as well. And I loved Allardyce last week. And he said, St. Tosson, who he brought in, big striker, he's struggling with the weather.
Well, we all are, aren't we, at the moment?
Well, he's used to playing in the rain, and it gets very cold in Turkey half the year. So I'm pretty sure he's not really worried by a bit of drizzle on Merseyside. Umani Ass remains the centre-forward for Everton. I find that baffling.
He's been doing all right. I tell you why I know that. It's because I keep having him on my bench in my fantasy team and he's racking up points left, right and centre.
It's more luck than fortune than skill, I tell you. He's got no idea what's going on. That's the 5:30 UK time kickoff on Saturday. Whilst Monday Night Football moved back to Sunday at 12 o'clock UK time is Crystal Palace against Tottenham. Lots of talk about Wilfried Zaha this week. Will he make a move to Spurs in the summer? A £50 million bid apparently going to be forthcoming. But there
gonna,
is no Zaha
not gonna play,
this weekend. Yeah. Injured. And if he isn't there, I always think of Zaha, and I went to the West Ham game a few weeks ago and I've covered him a fair amount. He doesn't statistically do as much as, say, a Pogba does. He doesn't have the assist numbers. But you watch teams, and you mentioned Lionel Messi. To a degree, it's vaguely similar. Because you're so busy thinking about what Wilfried Zaha is going to do, that gave the space to Townsend, certainly in the West Ham game. It stopped there being two markers on Benteke. It stopped the deep-lying midfielder tracking that run because they were thinking, if Zaha beats the fullback, he's going to beat the next man, going to beat the next man. Without him, they lose that balance, they lose that threat. Jason Puncheon, of course, out as well and may have been an able deputy on the other wing. I can't see Palace getting anything else from any game until he is back.
No, it's going to be very difficult for them against Spurs. Spurs, you know, I know they've had their struggles against Rochdale in the Cup. They've got to do that again on Wednesday. But, you know, you can't see anything other than Spurs just turning up and doing what they do. And Harry Kane scoring a few, unless he had too many at the Brit Awards in the week.
What did you think of him at the Brit Awards, which is our Grammys kind of thing?
Well, he was up with Camilla Cabello?
I didn't know who that was, so I just called her Camilla Parker Bowles.
She's definitely nothing like Camilla Parker Bowles.
I really wasn't sure who it was. I don't know the young pop star. I didn't know Jay Huss was.
Pop starlet. And let's just say
she's a singer.
She was a little bit more comfortable up on stage than Harry was.
I thought Harry'd done all right, though, because that is a terrible job. If someone says, can you give an award? And I've given an award at a lesser event. But I've given an award, and it's you have to go up and they say, I'll do a bit of banter. And you go, well, oh, you got some scripted banter. And they come out with like a few different things you could do.
Scripted banter.
Well, you know, because it has to be like... There was one like, I think this award could do with some female presenters. Yes, it could. What about me? Here's best international male. Like, it's not funny. It's not good. So I thought he'd done all right. Apart from when he gave her a high five and then went, which is a bit weird. But yeah, hopefully, I'm sure he did stay off the sauce and he'll be back in scoring form, I'm sure, for Spurs this weekend. Let's move on. West Bromwich Albion, bottom of the league. No charges going to be filed against the alleged cab stealers. They went on a team bonding break where apparently they only trained for about 3 hours and another 20 hours in the old pub. Whichever lost way, in the cup since then.
Whichever way you slice it.
Huddersfield this weekend.
That is not a good situation for that club. This West Brom are in big trouble. They sacked the directors and the chairman, didn't they, the week before last? They went on this warm weather training camp and the most senior players have been involved in an incident to the level that they've had to apologise for it officially. Mm. And, you know, if you're a West Brom fan, you're thinking, come on, lads, really. Mm. Just have a bit of
come on
foresight.
Now.
Come yeah. on. We're 7 points adrift at the bottom of the league here. Our captain is out, you know, getting involved in all sorts of nonsense in Spain.
On the Raz and joyriding. I mean, don't be funny. I know it's not. There's not going to be no charges, but they've apologised for it.
Yeah, they've apologised. And sometimes, you know, we complain that footballers have no freedom and that they should be allowed to go out and enjoy themselves and relax and maybe put the troubles on the pitch.
Which is true.
In the back of their mind.
They should be able to do that.
It's just bad timing. It's bad PR for the club and it doesn't look good. They're facing Huddersfield this weekend at home, who are just fresh off the back of beating Bournemouth convincingly last time out and will be confident.
What a shock that was as well. Mm. I mean, I don't want to say that David Wagner is looking over his shoulder because we know what's there and it's petrifying. For those that saw it, let's move on. For West Brom, I should mention this, they've only got 3 wins this season. Only Fulham and West Brom themselves have ever survived having 3 wins or less at this stage of a Premier League season. I think if they lose this game, they lose the next couple of games and they've got a lot of teams in and around them to play in the next few weeks. Maybe if they don't have 6 wins by 32 games, it's done for them, I think, sadly.
I genuinely think their only hope is to sack Alan Pardew immediately. Because it hasn't worked. Mm. He's got...
Without the bounce with Alan Pardew, what do you get?
He's got a worse points per game ratio than Tony Pulis had before him. And Pulis, was the reason he got sacked was because his points per game ratio had fallen from his previously high standards. But and there's been some talk this week that they are considering getting rid of Alan Pardew if they lose this game. And I could see that happening because that literally they have one last roll of the dice. If we're gonna go down, we might as well try and get someone in like Carlos Carvajal has done at Swansea who can just somehow magic some performances out of these players.
Big game against Huddersfield Town this weekend. Let's move on to Bournemouth against Newcastle. I was stunned that Bournemouth lost against Huddersfield. They've been playing so well in recent weeks. They've got a lot of defensive problems, Bournemouth, that it's difficult for me to quite assess where they've come from because they seem to have good defenders, but defensively they keep conceding really terrible goals, and that's been a story of Bournemouth for so much of this season. They're only about 2 wins away from safety. They've got Newcastle this weekend. I think they bounce back. I think they get a win. I think Newcastle could still be in serious trouble.
This is an important game for Newcastle because if you beat Manchester United at home and pull a result like that out of nowhere out of the bag and then you go and lose to Bournemouth,
it means nothing.
You've wasted all your good hard work that you did against Manchester United. So if they can go down there and win 6 points out of 2 games, the troubles are looking a lot less immediate.
The problems just continue for Newcastle when it comes to scoring, and I would question again who is going to score the goals to keep them up and to beat Bournemouth this weekend. I don't see it for Bournemouth. Goal scorers everywhere.
Matt Ritchie will fancy another goal, though, won't he, against his old team?
Yeah, I shouldn't let him. I was always surprised they let him go. I always thought he was a good Premier League caliber winger. Of course, scored the winner against Man U a couple of weeks ago. Let's go to Brighton, up against Swansea City this weekend. Carlos Carvalho's revolution continues for Swansea from looking dead and buried. There are a couple of places outside the relegation zone now, but they were a long way behind before that run started. 14 points under Carvalho since he came in. They're still in it, though, and I think they know that as well. And they can't afford to go to Brighton, who have got a good home record, and be as cavalier as maybe as they have been in recent weeks. I think they go there and they need to try and get a draw. It's whether they can do that with the air of positivity and playing on the front foot they've had in recent weeks.
I don't think they'll change their approach massively. I think they'll go there and they'll try and win.
And is that a mistake, though? Because Brighton are a very good home side. And teams that have gone there to try and win, barring Liverpool and the other bigger sides, invariably haven't. They're a very good organised side, Brighton. They get forward, they play good football. They may be one of the better promoted sides at playing football we've had maybe since Blackpool a few years ago came and tried to win every game they were in. I think Swansea have got to go and try and contain Brighton, whether they can. Another question, scored lots of goals against Coventry as well. Ojoa scored a great header. Murray is there. They've got Lacadie who scored on debut as well. Goal scorers for Brighton, I'd fancy him. One game you not mentioned, Burnley against Southampton. How lucky are Burnley? The start of their season was so good.
Yeah, they're really...
they've been so awful for 3 months.
Yep, they're really stuck in a rut. And I think these two teams really are the opposite of each other. Because you've got Burnley, who are more than the sum of their parts. And Southampton are very much less than the sum of their parts. If you look at their team, their players that they've got...
Quality.
There's a lot of good footballers in that team. There's a lot of good, experienced players. And yet, they are struggling. And they're, for the second consecutive season, not playing very exciting football. Fans aren't very happy with the manager. Very uninspiring situation down there. Burnley, despite their poor run of form at the moment, on paper a worse team than Southampton, but they're comfortable in the Premier League in the top half.
Burnley were obviously suffering from the same thing that Tony Pulis teams often suffer from. When you reach your target, it all falls away. Last year, West Brom could have competed for Europe. When they got the 40, they couldn't care anymore. But Burnley are a couple of points away, but 36 is probably about the line. Maybe 4 more points needed and they would survive this season. They've still got to get them, and I think they probably will, but I think they achieved their targets too early, and that could then impact on next season. That's what I'd be worried about with Burnley as opposed to this. Southampton, great win against West Bromwich Albion.
They
in
can
the
only
league,
beat West Brom.
It up in the cup.
They're the only team they can beat.
Got to beat someone else. You've got to beat someone else apart from Pardew. Draw. It's going to be a draw. 0-0 for me. That's it. That's all the games previewed for this weekend. David Walker, I'll see you next week. We'll see you all next week. Enjoy the football.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.